fell asleep amid the flowers. I originally developed the digitally sampled audio assignment as part of a writing about popular music class in which students created music blogs where they wrote reviews of albums that they chose based on their own personal branding. Developing these music blogs invoked a rich rhetorical ecology that asked students to continually consider their voices, their topics, the voices and topics of other reviewers, the genre of the review, and the needs of their intended audiences in order to create new and impactful writing. To help students with this work, the class read album reviews, rhetorical analyses of music, and cultural studies articles that served as models for student writing. In addition to these texts, the class read Mark Katz's book, Capturing Sound, which explains the ways in which recording technologies throughout history have influenced the ways in which music is composed, performed, distributed, circulated, and listened to. I had hoped that Katz's book would provide students with a basic introduction to musicology, a few in-depth genre histories, and a way of considering music making as a rhetorical act. I was not, however, expecting the book to change how students thought about their own writing by making direct connections between their compositional practices and those Katz ascribes to musicians. Ultimately, it was this connection between the composing practices of musicians and those of alphabetic writers that became the primary value of Katz's book within the class. This was particularly true in regards to our discussion of engaging and integrating source material. In Chapter 7 of the book, Katz claims,
"The roots of digital sampling reach back more than a millennium."
And he cites medieval chants, Renaissance masses, and the allusive practices of classical composers to demonstrate a long tradition of what he refers to as musical quoting. Katz claims that digital musical quoting is an extension of its analog predecessors, with the primary difference being that the notational method of analog quoting cites a musical work, whereas the splicing method of digital quoting cites a particular performance of a musical work. Despite this important difference, both quoting practices involve taking aspects of previous compositions and manipulating them to create something new. To explain what kinds of new things can be generated from the assembled fragments of digitized musical samples, Katz provides four examples. 1. The art piece that
transforms the ordinary into the precious
and questions the border between sound, technology, and music in the example of Paul Lansky's Not Just More Idle Chatter. 2. The dance song with
a subtlety that rewards close listening,
while also opening up issues of creativity, identity, appropriation, and power in the example of Fatboy Slim's Praise You. 3. The political hip-hop track that is
dizzying, exhilarating, and tantalizing,
as it quotes, loops, celebrates, and participates in Black traditions of rhetoric, politics, and music in the example of Public Enemies Fight the Power. And finally, 4.
The music of hobbyists that
exists outside the traditions, practices, and institutions we typically associate with composition,
while opening up questions of musicianship, participation, and community in the example of mashup artists such as the Freelance Hellraiser.
In his book, Katz provides generous readings of art objects within these four groups, but he does not shy away from the difficult questions they raise about appropriation, meaning, community, identity, creativity, and the responsibilities of composition. Each analysis demonstrates that sampling is both a valid form of engagement and a problematic practice. The chapter ends with a discussion of how sampling is the art of transformation.
A rich and complex practice, one that challenges our notions of originality, of borrowing, of craft, and even of composition itself.
Based on this statement, I asked students who had already connected the quoting they did with the musical quoting Katz writes about to discuss how sampling invites them to rethink how the composer should engage her sources. I received a wide variety of answers.
Source material needs to be attributed out of respect for the original author.
Source material is merely raw data to be manipulated to the whims of those who sample and quote it.
Sampling is okay, as long as the aggregated samples make something original.
The concept of originality is itself a myth.
Anything an author makes will inherently be original, because no two people are the same.
Quotes need to build to something beyond the source material in order to be useful.
Ethical sampling is not appropriation if it creates a conversation between the author, the sources, and the audience.
It was clear that investigating the similarities between sampling and quoting was helping students reconsider how they interact with sources, and I wondered if having hands-on practice with musical quoting might help them to think further about how they choose their sources, how sources can be manipulated, and the ways in which those manipulations have ramifications for the source author, the quoting composer's composition, and other external audiences. In other words, I wondered if providing students with an opportunity to engage in what Mark America refers to as
practice-based research
would enable students to understand the subtleties of source engagement and the inherently social aspects of composition. I hope that digital audio sampling would help to teach how authors engage others socially through their writing practices. I hope this experience would make clear the ways in which all writers are always relying on others to help them generate the perhaps not so original ideas they co-produce. By the time I had this idea, the course was underway. I had already outlined all the assignments, and it would have been unfair of me to require a new one. In response to this problem, I decided to offer students the opportunity to create a digitally sampled audio composition as extra credit. Because I wanted to see what students would produce, I offered a lot of extra credit. The instructions were vague.
Create a 3-minute audio track that includes 10 digital samples and 4 sound effects.
I assumed students might want an example, so I followed Katz's lead and instructed them to either create an art piece like Paul Lansky's Not Just More Idle Chatter, a dance song like Fatboy Slim's Praise You, or a densely packed sonic collage like the first 45 seconds of Public Enemy's Fight to Power. Students were quick to point out that the distinctions between the genres were blurry because each of the models were simultaneously art, music, and collage. And though I agreed with the critique, I kept the arbitrary taxonomy as a way to help students focus their energies towards aesthetics, affect, or critique. Aside from the assignment prompt, I didn't provide much guidance on how to create these tracks, and instead encouraged students to download the free sound editing software Audacity and learn to use it through online instructions, tutorials, and message boards created either by the production team or by its community of users. I chose such a lax method of instruction not only because this was an extra credit assignment that not everyone was doing, but also because moving the onus of expertise from myself as the instructor to the organic intellectuals within Audacity's sound editing community demonstrated another social aspect of writing, the creation, distribution, and circulation of instructional tools. Students not only found and used these kinds of resources, but also they shared them among each other, creating their own social learning community that extended beyond the borders of the physical and digital classroom environment I had designed for them. On the day the assignment was due, I blocked off the entire 50-minute class for sharing and discussing the compositions. Though students were initially reticent to share their experiments with a new medium, presenting work in progress had become a regular part of the course, and I soon had volunteers. Some students shared social critiques, like Abby.
I'm really rich.
Anthony.
It's just a reflection of a deep scientific lack of understanding.
And Rachel. Some students shared dance tracks, like Megan and Logan. Where the hell you at? No one created something they were comfortable referring to as art, but many had expanded beyond the prompt to create narratives, hype tracks, and experiments. All of the compositions my students produced sparked conversations between authors and listeners about the composing process, the affective dimension of sound, the politics of citation, and how to ethically create something using borrowed material. Overall, the assignment went well. Students gained nuanced understanding of source engagement through practice, they raised important questions about appropriation and subjectivity, they felt empowered by having taught themselves to compose in a new medium and genre, they came to understand writing as a social process that affects other humans in specific ways, and they had a lot of fun doing it. The next year, I tried adding more structure to the assignment and giving it to another writing about popular music class that had not read the Katz book. Specifically, I asked these new students to gather samples and create audio histories of a genre they were planning on writing about. In hindsight, I think the combination of the strict parameters and the grading encouraged students to take less risks than the previous group. For instance, I asked students to learn Audacity for themselves again, but they asked me to give a lecture. I asked students to remix and reimagine genre histories, but they chose to organize their tracks linearly. These second-generation compositions pale in comparison to their first-generation counterparts, and when I give this assignment again, I'll make sure to include the Mark Katz reading, abandon any rigid guidelines, and keep the emphasis on creative source use. Thank you.